Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday night, January 30th. 2026, 15 and a half minutes past the hour here, WGH Talk Time, last Friday in the month of January. Can you imagine that? February, just right around the corner, Groundhog Day coming up on Monday, and we'll tell you about the big celebration coming up here at the station later on in this program, so we hope you stay with us. Now, remember, you can listen to WWGH anytime by going to the website, WWGH1071.com, or by downloading the free TuneIn app on any mobile device and searching WGH Talk. We start the program tonight with somebody I'm sure you're all familiar with here in the state of Ohio. He is our current auditor, and he is running as the Republican for Attorney General this year. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones for the first time, Keith Faber. Mr. Faber, how are you?
I am great. How are you today?
Good to talk with you. Doing fine. Groundhog Day right around the corner. What's your prediction? Early spring or six more weeks of winter?
We've had a good winter, so hopefully it's going to wrap up and we're going to be done. Early spring.
Let's all hope. Mr. Faber, you recently penned an op-ed, Turning Down the Rhetoric, A Call for Civility and Accountability. Now, this was in response to another op-ed that was in the Columbus Dispatch that they titled, Renee Good Wasn't an Innocent, I Won't Tolerate Lawlessness as Ohio AG. What happened with these articles, and why did you write the current article?
Well, I think we wanted to reiterate our original point that we had, that the Dispatch, we wanted to turn down the rhetoric. The title of the first article that we sent to the Dispatch was Turn Down the Rhetoric. And we essentially wanted to say, you can protest all you want, but you can't be lawless. And lawless isn't protesting. And looking at what's happening, the government officials and many that are agitating and aggravating and encouraging certainly aren't doing people any favors. And so that was our point, and we just made it a little clearer with the second op-ed, and it was published in some conservative publications and made it real clear that the fact of the matter is we all just need to stand down, and we need to continue this concept where we need to respect everybody's right to protest and exercise their First Amendment rights, but that ends when you stop being lawful, when you throw things at ICE officers, when you decide to go ahead and interfere or obstruct their ability to do their jobs.
And certainly that has been on everybody's mind the last couple weeks with the death of Renee Good and then Mr. Preddy this week. What is your take on those two deaths, or killings as people are calling them?
Well, I mean, there's no question that both of them were tragic. Both of them are tragedies, and the fact of the matter is that any time you get into a circumstance to where somebody is injured or hurt in a law enforcement activity, it's not good. It's not good for society. It's not good for the officers. It's certainly not good for the person who's injured. God forbid that person be injured, be an officer. And that's why, you know, when I was a kid, my dad taught me when or not you engage with law enforcement, it's yes, sir, no, sir, you follow their instructions. We tried to teach our kids the same thing, and I added this caveat. If they make a mistake, we can sort it out after the fact. And that's important for us all to remember that, you know, the ICE folks are law enforcement. They're trying to do their job. They're doing a job that's mandated by Congress. And you can disagree. You cannot like them. You cannot like President Trump. But that doesn't give you a right to obstruct them doing their lawful duties. It doesn't give you a right to be lawless.
A lot of people have referred to these deaths as murder. How do you feel about that in both cases?
I don't think either one are murder. Murder requires intent and a forethought. Are they tragic? Absolutely. I think investigations are ongoing, certainly on the more recent one. And, you know, we had submitted the original article to the Dispatch almost a week, certainly well before the Peretti incident. occurred. But I go back to say, look, they appear to be too little, the facts are a little different in each one, but both of them involve somebody who, if they were following law enforcement requests and didn't try to obstruct law enforcement, may not have happened. Now, does that mean that they're, that the shootings were justified? I don't know. I would probably indicate that, you know, law enforcement can make mistakes. And certainly when you put law enforcement under stress and you manipulate the circumstance, we're never going to have as good a view as we do when we go back and see slow motion video and can have that thought after the fact. But in the end, the bottom line is neither one needed to happen. And if people just respected, didn't get in the streets, if you want to have a sign and protest and shout and holler, that's one thing. But trying to interfere with ICE doing their job is going to lead to more injuries. And the elected officials who are encouraging that, shame on you.
You write in your article, you say, the Columbus Dispatch printed the column after the shooting of Alex Priddy, but changed the title to read, Renee Good wasn't an innocent. There was more to that, but that's what's in the... you wrote here. That is sort of the opposite of calming down the rhetoric. It was purposely inflammatory. Is it any wonder why people don't trust the mainstream media? How do you feel about the Columbus Dispatch, and why do you think they did this, in your opinion?
Look, I'm not going to try and second guess their editors. One, we submitted the article before the Peretti shooting. I would think after the Peretti shooting, when we submitted an article entitled Tone Down the Rhetoric, after another incident that basically was what we were predicting was going to happen in the first article, I would think that they would have ran it with the original title. But they chose not to. They wanted to highlight some things in there where I didn't concede the leftist dogma that Renee Good was an innocent. The facts don't support that. The facts indicate that she was there for her own purposes to resist. And God bless her, she didn't deserve to get shot. But in the end, you know, that officer didn't deserve to get hit with a car that day when he came to work either. So it's a more complicated circumstance. I'm not going to second guess the Columbus Dispatch. You know, over the years, I've had good instances, interactions with the Columbus Dispatch. I've got a former dispatch reporter on my staff. And the fact of the matter is we want to give them the benefit of the doubt. But too often, the paper has shown that it has a political agenda.
What do you believe that its political agenda is?
Well, look, I think it's only observable by their focus in their editorial board. It is not a center-right paper. It is a center-left paper. And that tends to be their political agenda. Has historically not been the case, but when their ownership changed and they were bought as part of the current network, that tends to be what you're seeing. But again, they have some very good reporters there, and they have some good folks there, so I'm not going to try and paint with a broad brush. I don't think that's fair to them, just like trying to paint with all conservatives as one school or another school is fair to us. And so I would come back and say, look, one of the problems we have across the political landscape today is that we all want to envision everybody's comments, everybody's intent, with our own view of what we think their intent should be based on who we think they are. And I think that's dangerous. Conservatives do that. Liberals do that. Certainly the people who are trying to scope fear and dissension are trying to do that as well. And look, I'm not going to, I try and avoid that when I can, but sometimes, look, everybody's human. I fall guilty to and try to impose bias on people as well as what I think their bias is. Sometimes you're right. Sometimes you're not.
Let's talk about rhetoric. In your article, you say there can be no mistake if you infringe on others' rights or obstruct law enforcement, you're breaking the law. When public officials encourage such resistance, they're only making a bad situation worse, but some, like my Democratic opponent for Attorney General, Elliot Forehan, are still using vile rhetoric. He recently posted a video explaining how he will kill Donald Trump. That is the type of comment we should all be opposed to, which is why I called on Democrat Amy Acton to denounce Forehan's evil comments. Now, just to be clear, because I do want your comment on this, the video was posted on Facebook by Mr. Forehan, and he's looking at a camera, and this is what he says. I want to tell you what I mean when I say that I am going to kill Donald Trump. I mean I'm going to obtain a conviction rendered by a jury of his peers at a standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, based on evidence presented at a trial, conducted in accordance with the requirements of due process resulting in a sentence duly executed of capital punishment. This is what I mean when I say that I am going to kill Donald Trump. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think his comments are vile. I think calling for political violence is never okay, especially against our president who's had two assassination attempts on his life. This is just months after we saw the horrible public execution of Charlie Kirk, by the way, which my opponent, Mr. Forehand, celebrated. That kind of comment does nothing, and certainly it not only exposes his lack of knowledge as to what the Attorney General's office does, but it looks more like what we saw in New York, where somebody says, "Hey, I'm going to convict this person before I even see a crime." I mean, that's one of the things that I think is just so dangerous, and it stinks of lawfare. It stinks of, it's just vile, period.
Want to talk about, you said you had called on Amy Acton to condemn this. Now, I do want to mention that John Kulowitz, who is also running in the Democratic primary for Attorney General, he did condemn this. And as of June 28th at 4:30 p.m., State House News Bureau, Amy Acton said, "I strongly condemn this rhetoric. Ohioans have had enough of the chaos, hate, and vitriol, whether it's threats of political violence or actual political violence. They have no place in our politics." That was Amy Acton.
Great. I think it took her a while to get there, but I'm glad she got there. Both sides need to be willing to condemn this kind of rhetoric immediately. I just think there's no excuse for it. I'm glad she came out and was critical of it. And I was happy to see Kulowitz do the same.
But you think it took too long for them to do that?
Kulowitz came out pretty quickly. I think you're right on that. I mean, they're in a primary against each other, assuming both of them get filed. But Amy certainly didn't come right out on it. Now, I mean, look, campaigns are complicated in busy places. I'm not going to jump on her for a little bit of delay, but she'll have to answer that question. That's better for her and her team.
Vivek Ramaswamy, the Republican candidate, also responded to this. He said, "This is what Amy Acton and the Ohio Democrats implicitly endorse. Utterly shameful." What do you make of Mr. Ramaswamy's comments?
Well, I'm going to let Vivek speak for himself, but I'll go back and do a little different on my comment. This is where, when I say turn down the rhetoric, we all need to come together, and we all need to come out and say, look, these kind of comments don't help anybody. I would love to hear Mr. Kulowitz and, frankly, Amy Acton and all of the teams come together and say, we're going to support law enforcement. You never have a right to throw an ice brick at a law enforcement officer. You never have the right to impede a law enforcement officer when they're trying to do their job. You never have the right to put a law enforcement in jeopardy, to threaten them, to do those kind of things that are happening. And frankly, I would also call on Amy Acton and the Democrats to come and say, we're going to stand down on the sanctuary city policies. We know that sanctuary city policies are causing more harm than not. And so that's where I'd rather see him talk about than whether or not they come back and do something quickly.
Right. I think a lot of people, and forgive me for asking this, but I think in Mr. Ramaswamy's comment, this is what Amy Acton and the Ohio Democrats implicitly endorse, utterly shameful. I think it's taking your opponent, singling them out, and then looping all the Democrats together, even though, as you said, Mr. Kulowitz did denounce this pretty quickly, and I think Amy Acton did within 24 hours. When you loop people together, or lump them together, I guess I should say, as you were saying earlier, lumping all Republicans or all Democrats and speaking in a certain rhetoric, this can cause problems, and I think that's why people might have a problem with Mr. Ramaswamy's comments.
Yeah, I'll let Vivek and his team speak for himself, but I think what they were probably getting to is the bigger issue we're seeing nationally with regard to what seems to be a line in their party's apparatus, certainly certain segments of their party. And I agree. I don't think you, and you didn't hear me do it to my opponents, I don't think you paint with as broad a brush all the time. But in the end, I think we do have to be careful and stand up and protect law enforcement, defend our law enforcement. And when you've got a party that's saying, this is Nazi activity, it is not. And that is dangerous. It undercuts the credibility. Without our law enforcement officials keeping us all safe, we're going to be in a world of hurt as a community and as a state and, frankly, as a country. Agitators have no right to obstruct law enforcement, period. The First Amendment protects the right to protest and assemble, not to obstruct justice. And I'm happy to call out places that are encouraging that. And the other side of it's also true. We have to be careful on our side. And if you remember, the first article I wrote was critical, talking about the people who were trying to do self-help and going into the Somali community and the daycares. If you think there's fraud someplace, contact us. We have a fraud hotline, 1-866-FRAUD-OH. That doesn't give you a right to go try and do self-help on an investigatory side either. And so we have to be careful on both sides.
Well, and just one more thing here when it comes to this rhetoric. The Ohio Republican Party chairman urged people to vote for a Republican candidate instead of Mr. Forehand, and he said, "For Attorney General, Ohioans must support Keith Faber over this diabolical lunatic. There is no place in Ohio for rhetoric that threatens lives or undermines the rule of law." Do you think diabolical lunatic is rhetoric and maybe going a little too far in this statement?
Was it verbal hyperbole? Probably. But I'll go back and say, if you call for the execution of the president, if you celebrate the assassination of another person, the way Charlie Kirk was assassinated, I think he might be as close as you can find to somebody who meets that definition. So I'll go back and say, sometimes your actions speak a good definition for the words.
You know, Mr. Faber, for people listening to this who are saying that you are condemning Democrats for not responding quick enough or things that they are saying, but saying the Republicans can speak for themselves or might be using hyperbole, that essentially you're defending your own party when it comes to rhetoric and attacking the other or not defending them. What do you say to that?
The fact of the matter is I've tried not to. I was the first one who said Mr. Kulwitz did respond quickly. I don't know where you're going with your question. I don't understand your premise. But the short answer is that, I'll let Vivek and his team answer for his comments. But if you look at the totality of the circumstance right now, there is one party that has been supporting law enforcement and supporting people being lawful, and the other has some members of their party that are encouraging lawlessness. I think the better answer is that we say, look, if you disagree, that's okay. I'll defend your right to disagree. I'll defend your right to exercise First Amendment rights, but I will not defend your right to be lawless in doing that.
I guess just the question was, is rhetoric, or does it depend which party you're a member of?
Look, I'm a proud Republican, but I'm not a Republican because I like elephants better than donkeys. I'm a Republican because of the values of the parties that I stand for, from Reagan to and forward. The fact of the matter is that there are differences between the parties. There are differences in ideology. There are differences on what we believe should happen and how they should be governed. Well, that doesn't mean that every Republican, somebody who claims to be a Republican or is a Republican, is somebody that I agree with 100% of the time. But the reality is, just like some Democrats are people who I agree and work very, very well with. I was on a call just literally earlier yesterday with a gentleman who I served with in the legislature for a very long time, who was a very active Democrat, and we were very good friends. And so that's something that I think you need to remember happens in government. Mm-hmm. The other thing I used to point out all the time is when I was Senate president, the vast majority, over 90% of the legislation that we passed in the State House, was bipartisan. You don't see that in Congress. We're a divided country right now, but I still think that local state government works best without regard to partisan labels. And then I'll just give you one last stop on this conversation with regard to this partisan issue. Offices, when you get elected statewide, you run in a partisan role, but you don't govern as a partisan official. As state auditor, I have been vigorously nonpartisan in doing that job. I've prosecuted and convicted 154 individuals. I have no idea how many Republicans there are or how many Democrats there are, but I can tell you there were Republicans in that list and there were Democrats in that list. We do our job to keep accountability first and foremost. And as Attorney General, we will continue to do the same without regard to partisanship. And that's where the partisan label should end, in doing your job to defend and protect all Ohioans.
Beyond partisan, I want to get back to rhetoric, because I think this is an important article that you wrote. The Ohio Education Association, you said that they were reckless and harmful in your first article, and you took some blowback on this in the comment section in the Columbus Dispatch. How do you feel, clearly, about the Ohio Education Association, and what did you make of the comments, the blowback from this?
I didn't read the comments in the Dispatch, but I will tell you the Ohio Education Association has a long history of being part of the allied liberal organizations. I mean, they are a partisan organization. They support, I think, 80 to 90% Democrats. They tend to do things that protect the adults in education, many times at the expense of the children. Now, the fact of the matter, that's not a secret, and this article was designed to draw and support a left-leaning approach. When you send out a letter as president of the Ohio Education Association, State Teachers Union, essentially trying to tell people, hey, if ICE comes, don't help them. There were things in that letter which I think crossed the line, and we called them out on it. Frankly, they should not have done that. This is Ohio. And the teachers in Ohio know how to deal with people who come into their school. And if they come into the school as law enforcement, I hope they cooperate.
Want to talk about ICE here. A lot of people in Ohio are worried that ICE might be headed here. A lot of people in Springfield are worried that ICE might be headed there. What would you say to those people, if you were Attorney General, how this should and would be handled?
Well, the first thing I would point out is that if you look all across the country where ICE has been active, you're really only seeing the problems and people being the things that we're seeing in Minnesota. You're seeing these tragic situations in areas where the left is spurring agitators to violently confront or impede ICE operations. Compare the places to where ICE has had much more vigorous activity and has removed a whole lot more people doing their federal mandate, and you see far less problems. And so you have to ask yourself, what's the difference? And part of it is sanctuary, where ICE can participate and actually remove violent people from the jails. You don't have all of the issues. Where ICE gets cooperation of local law enforcement, they can use local policing standards when ICE is effectuating their arrest and help minimize problems. And in Ohio, I think we have a very good system where local law enforcement, state law enforcement cooperate with federal law enforcement. So I don't anticipate problems. Look, I think that you first need to address, you know, what they're going to do and why they're coming here. And hopefully they don't find a whole lot of things they have to do, because it's been taken care of locally.
I want to come back to Mr. Preddy just for a second. You said in your piece here, your op-ed, your most recent op-ed, you said the investigation is ongoing, and as a strong Second Amendment supporter, I believe having a gun doesn't make you inherently dangerous. However, your actions while carrying a gun might. What do you mean exactly by that? A lot of Second Amendment people seem to be upset by the president's comments and what has come about since Mr. Preddy's death or killing, depending how people refer to it.
Yeah, as I said, the investigation's ongoing there. I don't think him having a gun, frankly, changes the scenario at all. I would always tell you, as somebody who's a Second Amendment and a concealed carry permit holder, you know, when you interact with law enforcement and you're armed, you probably need to be a little bit more stable, a little bit more calm, to avoid unintended consequences and potentially aggravating what could become a very volatile situation very quickly. But having said that, to me, the fact that he was carrying a gun doesn't mean he was right or wrong and that he was doing anything untoward. Exactly as I said, his conduct, what he was doing, if he was brandishing the gun, all of the other facts certainly could change the scenario. But the investigation's going on. I'm not going to say he was doing that or wasn't doing that. You know, there's an argument that he wasn't originally somebody said he was. I don't know. I wasn't there. I haven't looked at all the video. But in the end, having a gun in and of itself should not be considered the problem.
Today, reporter Don Lemon, well, actually yesterday, was arrested and charged by the federal government over an incident in Minnesota. What do you make of what has happened with Don Lemon?
If you storm a church during a church service to try and execute your political philosophy and make your point, that should be considered illegal. You don't have the right in exercising your First Amendment to trample on somebody else's First Amendment. You don't have the right to trespass. You don't have the right to go into that church and do what they did in that video. That was disgusting, distasteful, and frankly an example of what outrageousness looks like. If Don Lemon was part of the organizing, part of the complicity, part of the activity, then he should be held accountable just like everybody else. And if that happens, then you know there are plenty of laws that can be enforced to stop that activity. The things that they were saying in that church to children and to other places were vile, but it's not what they're saying. It's the fact that they were trying to shout down and stop a lawful church assembly. That's unacceptable in America. That is the kind of thing where you're trying to resist somebody else's exercise of their religious liberties.
Two more quick questions. Republican Mike DeWine is now in his last year as governor, 8-year term. What do you make of Mike DeWine in his 8 years?
The governor and I have agreed a lot. We've disagreed a few times. I think he has served the state in an admirable, honorable fashion. And frankly, I'm happy to consider Mike DeWine a friend.
And if you are elected attorney general, why should people vote for you for attorney general, I guess is what I should say.
Well, the simplest answer is that I am prepared to be attorney general on day one. I have a broad experience as somebody who has practiced law, somebody who has been in the legislature, and somebody who has run a broad-based state organization. We have over 800 employees in 11 locations. We have convicted more than 154 individuals for lying, cheating, and stealing. I have tried felony cases. The fact of the matter is I am well prepared to be attorney general, and that's why I'm running to be attorney general. The fact of the matter is we also need somebody who is going to support law enforcement, help protect our senior citizens from elder abuse, help push back on cyber fraud and try and catch the cyber fraudsters. And we will support law enforcement and prosecutors across the state. I'm honored to have the endorsement of over 2/3 of Ohio's sitting county sheriffs and over 1/3 of their county prosecutors. We will continue to grow in support, and we will continue to go around Ohio and talk to Ohioans about what it means to protect their families and work on things that will make Ohio affordable.
One quick question here before we wrap up. Today, I think the recent polling showed that Donald Trump, President Trump, is at a 37% approval rating. Do you still support the president, and what do you make of that recent poll?
Presidential polls ebb and flow. During midterm elections in the middle of their term, I don't think he's at a low. I think he's actually higher than he was last time. I'd have to look at the polling numbers again. He's probably consistent with where other presidents were at a similar time. The president does a lot of things. Some people like some of them and don't like other things. But I think it's important to remember that we will continue to work on making Ohio affordable, safe, and a country that our kids and grandkids could be proud of. That's the real distinction between the vision of my party and the vision of the other side. And so the short answer is, do I still support the president? Yes, I do. I think the president has a unique style that sometimes I don't always think in the moment comes off the cleanest. But he got elected to lower prices. Gas prices are far lower today than they were before. He got elected to close the border. And you know what? The border's closed, despite Biden and Democrats saying they couldn't close it. Sometime I'd love to talk to you about what I saw when I went to the Biden border, and the human trafficking and the drugs and the personal toil that we saw firsthand there. All of those are things that Donald Trump has done a fabulous job on. And the economy's doing better. We continue to lower expenses under the Trump administration. And it's not doing good enough yet, but it's doing better.
I want to let the audience know that we've been chatting with your auditor of the state of Ohio, Keith Faber, currently running on the Republican side for Attorney General this fall. Mr. Faber, I thank you for coming on and having this live conversation. Can't misquote somebody in a live conversation, and I appreciate you answering the questions and your candor. And I hope you do come back and we can continue to talk as the election cycle goes on.
Thanks for having me. And if people want to find out more, go to KeithFaber.org, KeithFaber.org. If you see fraud, waste, or abuse in state government, go to OhioAuditor.gov, OhioAuditor.gov, or call us at 1-866-FRAUD-OH. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Bye-bye. All right, there's your auditor and current Republican candidate for Attorney General, Keith Faber. All right, Matt, you're here. What do you make of that?
He speaks pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never met Keith Faber or talked to him, so there you have it. Hopefully, you got your questions answered.
I thought it was good. I mean, now I think there were some things in there that maybe were a little bit questionable, but overall, I think it was good.
Well, I think we've got to have these conversations. I think anybody worth their salt, willing to run for office, has got to come on and answer questions, and I think he did, and I appreciate that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you always like when somebody answers questions.
You know, I think that's what we're here for.
Comes for the job.
Well, it comes with the job. Yeah, I would say so.
Is that not what I said?
I think you said comes for the job.
Maybe I did. I don't know.
Did anything jump out in that interview to you?
Well, I mean, I think he's still leaning on the fact that he said, well, not he, but his opponent said that he would kill Donald Trump. But, I mean, you know, I think that he's probably taking it a little bit too literal, especially seeing as, I mean, the full quote would, you know, even say as much. I mean, he said that he would kill Donald Trump in a court of law, which, again, I mean, you know, questionable language considering, I mean, everything that has happened, like you mentioned, the killing of Charlie Kirk, and Donald Trump has had two attempts on his life. But, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that he didn't mean it in that kind of way.
So how did you feel Mr. Faber answered that? I mean, we read the quote to him.
Yeah, but then he went back after the fact and then said it again that, like, you know, said that, I don't remember exactly how he phrased, but basically said that there was a, you know, threatened to kill the president. And that's, you know, again, not exactly what was said.
What do you make of party rhetoric, Democrat versus Republican? There was a little conversation there about that.
Well, I mean, it seems that he didn't want to take any jabs at Vivek. I mean, you know, I think Vivek had a bit of rhetoric going on there himself, but he wouldn't touch that. He said he'd leave that to Vivek and his people.
Well, I don't know. You know, politics, that's a difficult game, is what I would say.
I mean, I guess. I think people should just say what they think, though. I think that would make things a lot easier in most cases.
Do you think the rhetoric is too strong in the world, in Ohio?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure I've told the story before, but like on YouTube, you can watch the first ever like a televised presidential debate, and it was between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy. And at one point in there, Richard Nixon says something along the lines of, like, you know, I find myself much in agreement with Senator Kennedy. We have the same vision for America, just different viewpoints on how to get there. You know, you don't hear anything like that anymore. It's always like the other side's going to, you know, it's either me or you're ruining the country kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I have to wonder about this guy, though, that says, I mean, I get that he wasn't literally talking about killing Donald Trump, but I don't know why you would make that comment. Certainly made Mr. Kulowitz, who is running for Attorney General on the Democratic side, and Amy Acton denounce it. I mean, that's not a good comment to make.
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, I think they did good to, I mean, it was good on them to denounce the comment. I think that's good.
So, But you don't think he... Well, he... It seemed to be more about a court of law, but...
Who, he being...
Elliot Forehand.
I don't think he what?
You don't think he was... He wasn't meaning that literally.
Well, no,
killed
I mean,
Donald Trump.
Now, maybe I'm missing part of the like, you know, speech or something. But, I mean, if he said it all in the same video, I mean, he went back and, you know, corrected himself. I mean, like, I'm sure he knew what he did when he said it. I think that's why he went back and said, well, you know, when I say, you know, I...
Well, I think it's all in the video.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why, when I say went back, I mean, like, you know, made a point to go back in the little, like, the video and address it before it even, you know... I mean, honestly, in the video, I probably would have just fixed it, I guess, but... No, I don't think he literally meant he was going to go and kill Donald Trump. I mean, he said as much. He said, when I say I'm going to kill Donald Trump, I mean in, you know, a court of law and, you know, so on and so forth.
But do you think that's how people took it? See, this sometimes is where the... What about Don Lemon? Well, let's talk about that. What Mr. Faber's feelings were about Don Lemon.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, again, I don't think Don Lemon... It wouldn't seem to me, at least, that Don Lemon was really... I don't think he was protesting there. He was reporting on the protests. So it's not like he barged into the church. The protesters barged into the church. He followed because, you know, that's what you do. And, I guess he got into some altercation with the pastor, but, I mean, the pastor called their actions like deplorable or something like that and told him to leave the church.
People are upset about that.
About the interaction with the pastor?
Yeah. Well, what do you make about the comments by the head of the Republican Party in regard to Forehand's comments. I don't even know where that went. Oh, there it is, I think. Okay. For Attorney General, Ohioans must support Keith Faber over this diabolical lunatic. There is no place in Ohio for rhetoric that threatens lives or undermines the rule of law.
I don't know.
That's the Ohio Republican Party chairman.
I think that calling somebody a diabolical lunatic might just be a bit of rhetoric, you know. I mean, that's back to like the whole you gotta elect me or the world's gonna end kind of thing. Can you elect somebody bad? You can certainly elect bad people, but like, you know, it's so long as you know. In theory, everybody else should be able to hold out.
If you have any thoughts, give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give us a buzz. We'd love to hear from you. Tell people about the big Groundhog celebration coming up on Monday.
Yes, this Monday. Either out back of the studio or maybe possibly somewhere in the building here. We are going to have the Groundhog Day event. It will start at 8:15. The Groundhog will be here at 8:45. The Salvation Army will be there, so you can get yourself some hot chocolate or coffee or some hot water if you wanted hot water for some reason. The Groundhog will get there at 8:45. Bob Welch will be coming down from Columbus. He will have a Groundhog pizza, and under each of those slices of pizza, there will be a piece of paper that says either 6 more weeks of winter or an early spring. And then once the Groundhog selects it, Mary Ellen Lithwell will be there to sign it into fact. And Jack Kellogg, after 19 years, will be there in his Groundhog Day sweatshirt making Spam sandwiches once
now,
again.
Now, maybe, we don't know, if it moves inside, there probably will not be Spam.
Yes, that would make sense.
But, you know, I don't know, there might be a can of Spam laying around, maybe.
You could, I mean, I think you can eat Spam without it being cooked, but I wouldn't recommend it.
I think people do, I think they eat it raw.
Do they?
Oh, yes. It's kind of like a lunch meat sort of a thing.
I've never eaten raw Spam. That does not sound good to me. I like fried Spam.
Well, there you are. Phone lines are open again. 53 minutes past the hour here. Feel free to get in. 740-383-9944. Well, the Ayers Ratliff trial continues. Apparently, he took the stand.
That's interesting.
And apparently, the prosecution did not cross-examine him, which I think's interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's rather interesting. I figure if there's anybody, the prosecution would be chomping at the bits to, cross-examine, it'd be the accused party. that's usually how the how it works.
I don't know. You got me. I don't know how all that's going to turn out. I think it's going to be very interesting as time goes along.
Well, I don't know. How long do trials usually last?
Well, this one I heard was going to last about 10 days is, I think, what they had asked for.
That's a quick trial.
Well, I mean, trials don't last forever.
I don't know. I mean, for some reason, I feel like trials get drug out for, like, months. I don't know.
Well, it depends on how many witnesses you have and things of that nature. I don't know. I really don't know.
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Especially, like, civil court things feel like they take forever.
Well, civil's different. I mean, the prosecution has already rested here, and now they've called heirs, so how many more witnesses do you think they have, the defense? I can't imagine it's a whole lot.
I don't know. 10 days seems pretty short for a trial, but again, I mean, I don't know. I've never been on a jury or anything.
You know, the moment that the verdict comes down, boy, that'll be a moment, won't it? I mean, you would have to be, you know, your heart in your stomach when that's going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would think so.
But?
Big day. Big day.
Well, like I said, does anybody get out unscathed?
No, I don't think anybody ever gets out unscathed.
Well, this is a rough one.
Yes, this one.
This has been 2 years. Oh my lord, 2 years of rough behavior here.
Well, I mean, I don't know why it started out so. I don't know. From the beginning, it was rough.
Well, what's coming up on your show tonight at 10:15?
Tonight we're going to be talking about the coaching carousel. There are some coaches who have taken jobs and whatnot.
Coaching carousel.
Yes, the coaching carousel.
That is the weirdest sounding thing I've ever heard.
That's just, I mean, it's just the coaching free agency, really. But, so we're going to talk about the coaching carousel and, well, talk about some politics there.
Well, again, we do thank the Republican candidate for Attorney General and current auditor of the state of Ohio, Keith Faber, for coming on. Thought he did a fine job.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
You know, you gotta do the shows. I don't know why more people don't do the shows.
I think people are scared for some reason.
Why?
I don't know, I think...
Did you find any unfairness in that interview?
I mean, no. I mean, he answered all the questions.
Yeah.
I think maybe... I don't know, there was one point in which I think maybe he, like, perceived some, because he just said, I don't remember exactly what he said, but, like, I don't know what you're, like, you know, exactly what you're...
I don't think he understood the question about, does the political party matter when it comes to rhetoric if you're going to condemn it? Because it seems like he was saying Vivek will have to answer for himself, and that the head of the Republican Party was speaking in hyperbole. But when it came to Amy Acton and the other side, you know, they were just wrong.
Well, you know, that's...
I thought that's what I said.
I mean, I don't think he quite understood it or something. I don't know, because it was just the way he answered. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, I asked it again. I tried to shrink it down and slam it in there again. No, I think, like, he got it the second time.
Well, I mean, the second time the question was significantly shorter. Because the second time it was just like, does the party matter when it comes to rhetoric, period?
Right. Well, that's right. The shortest distance between two lines is a straight line. That's how you got to do it sometimes. I was trying to explain what was going on, and I guess we didn't need all that. We just need to get the question out.
He got lost somewhere along the line.
Somewhere along the line. But we put it back on the track.
Yeah. I thought it was good.
You know, being the auditor of state, he I don't know that he spent any time here, but his office has certainly spent some time here in Marion.
Yes. Well, they have, yes.
Interesting stuff. as the day goes along. We had somebody else. I don't know if that's the other person's going to join us in the second hour or not. They were trying to call in, and I got to figure out what's going on with that other person.
Well, that's rather interesting.
And remember, the phone lines will stay open, and we have the big Groundhog Celebration Monday morning at 8:15. That's going to be big. There's always stuff going on here you don't want to miss on WGH Talk. How about that? The Auditor of State running for Attorney General on the Republican ticket this coming November. Keith Faber was the guest this hour, and we'll come back with much more in about 15 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Talking Place. Just listen to former star of The Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs.
Where did the name Marla come from?